This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Trying my patience, try pink carnations, red roses and yellow daffodils. Don't forget the flowers someday, I know you.
It is the Garden Hotline, and Aaron, do you know who that is? The band?
Oh.
Put you on the spot. They're local. I mean, they are from this area.
Oh, boy, is that Wilco?
It is Wilco. Ding, ding, ding. I don't have my bill. Yeah, it is Wilco from Belleville, originally Uncle Tupelo, and then they split off into Sunvolt and Wilco, and I love that song. It's from the mid-90s. It was on a double album called Being There, and it just came to mind. As we're sitting here talking about flowers, that would be perfect. And it also prompted me to ask you about the fall wildflower market. What is that?
Well, thank you so much for asking about that. The fall wildflower market is a wildflower market that is held out at Shaw Nature Reserve on September 6th. From 3 to 7, that's a Friday evening, and we have vendors, plant vendors from the Missouri area who will be selling native plants, and then we also have some local artisans that also set up some of their shops. And so we do have a pre-sale available, so an online pre-sale that you can order plants through Shaw Nature Reserve. And that pre-sale is going on right now, and it ends actually on Monday, August 19th at 9 p.m. And if you are interested in pre-ordering plants from Shaw Nature Reserve specifically, please visit snrshop.org, and all of the information will be listed there along with plants that you can purchase.
snrshop.org?
snrshop.org.
This is a good tip. It's a good opportunity for people. Yeah. That is Erin Goss. She is on the program for the first time. She did fantastically in the first hour answering your questions. She's a landscape designer, knows a lot about plants, obviously, native plants and trees and gardening. The number to call for your question, and we have open phone lines right now, it is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Besides gardening, Aaron, what are some of your hobbies and interests?
Well, I absolutely love reading. I love reading pretty much anything, especially British crime drama, and then British crime novels. And then I also really enjoy nonfiction, history, sociology, history of religion. And then I also I grow a lot. I mean, this is plant related, but I grow a lot of plants, and I like to make things from those plants.
I
make lip balms.
Lip balms, okay.
Yeah. So I actually have one with me.
Interesting.
And I use native plants and also non-natives. And then I have two cats, and they keep me pretty busy, an elderly cat and then a younger one. And then I also have a partner. His name is Steve. And so, you know, I got a good life.
Sounds like it. Sounds like a good life. Do you live close to the reserve?
I don't. I actually live on the southwest side of St. Louis in Crestwood. So I am about a 30-minute drive.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. I will admit I'm not used to commuting to work. I have always lived fairly close so I could bike, walk, or take the bus. So this is a little bit of a change, but it's a beautiful drive. 44 is an extraordinarily beautiful highway, interstate. And I feel very lucky to be working out at the reserve.
Well, we're lucky to have you here this morning. And Christy is up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a plant bed, and some of the things have gotten so tall that they're really need to be moved because you can't see the shorter plants behind them. Does she have any idea whether the holly trees or the hibiscus bushes would be happier being uprooted and moved to a new location. I don't know which of those would be happier to be moved or, thank you.
So real quick, if the holly tree, how big is your holly tree?
They're bushes, and there's three of them, and they're about knee high.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. So hibiscus in general, those are pretty forgiving plants, so you should be able to transplant those with no problem. The holly bushes, those are I would take a little bit more care. In general, when you're transplanting shrubs of any kind, you want to make sure to dig the root ball out as big as possible. So make it as big as possible. So from the base of the trunk, go out about 2 feet and then start digging. And I use a flat, very, very sharp, flat shovel, and then kind of take that shovel and around the shrub, about 2 feet from that base. And then you can use, I'm a pretty small person, so I have to use a lot of leverage. So I just use that tool, and then I use my body in order to pull it out. But again, that hibiscus is really going to be forgiving. Those you can usually transplant with no problem. The holly bushes, I would take a little bit more care. And then if you can wait until they are dormant. So wait until all the leaves, at least on the hibiscus, the leaves drop. And then transplant, you'll have a better success.
And should that be like in the fall?
Yeah, that's a good time to move. So move them. So, you can't really move them whenever the ground's frozen. So your window is going to be about a late October to maybe mid-December, depending on our temperatures.
Well, thank you. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
314-436-7900. John, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Aaron.
Hey, good morning. I got two questions. First of all, I got some rosemary I planted in the ground. Can it survive our winter?
It depends on our winters. So in general, the answer is no. So we have too cold of winters for rosemary to survive. However, there have been some winters that I plant rosemary every year. I absolutely love it. And I have had some make it through the winter. So if you can go into it with the hope that it will last, but the expectation that it will not, then you probably won't be, disappointed if it won't last. So
if I would cover it, with something that would it help its survival chances?
Yeah, that does help. A lot of people will do that with fig trees as well. So you may have, the important part is that the root systems are protected, because your rosemary plant might die back to the ground a lot like a fig tree would, but that root system is still alive, and then it'll shoot out new growth the next year. So if you
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you can make sure to mulch around that, about the rosemary, and then protect it either with some sort of, like with figs, you usually use like a cage of some sort, and you can fill it with leaf material, and then you can even put like a frost cloth around it. You can do something similar with rosemary. Just make sure that there's some kind of mulch on the ground around the rosemary to specifically protect the root system. There's no
guarantee. I think I'm going to try that. My second question is about nuttage. You have any? The place I go to, they sell a product for me to do it. But would you recommend a commercial place to do it instead of, an amateur like me?
Do you mean like a business that might help with the nut sedge? A lot of lawn companies can help with that, with nut sedge. I can't necessarily recommend one specifically, and I apologize about that. But if you have a lawn company that you're working with right now, I would just ask if they have any recommendations, or ask if they can help you treat the nut sedge.
Okay. Thank you very much, and you have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, John. The number is 314-436-7900. If you just called in, we will get to your question in just a moment. We just have to take a quick break. Aaron Goss is our gardening expert this morning, and you're listening to the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
On the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good morning. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by Aaron Goss, who is the coordinator for the Native Plant Initiative at Shaw Nature Reserve. So she knows a lot about plants and gardening. She's a landscape designer, and she is answering your questions this morning at 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Linda, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I was given five, I'll call them raspberry plant sticks. And only two have survived, and they're pretty nice plants already. But I'd like to know if I could move one of them. I had just this very small space, or if I should move it. One of them is planted maybe about, I'd say about 6 inches from the side of our house, which is brick. So should I leave the plant there, or could I possibly move it? And you'd already answered a plant question about moving a party hibiscus, and that plant is there too, so I probably have to move that plant. And when would I want to move that hibiscus, like next month maybe?
Yeah, so to answer your hibiscus question, I would wait until it drops all of its leaves and goes dormant. So that would be after our last frost in general. So I would move it in late October and into November is when I would move the hardy hibiscus. As far as the raspberry plants go, do you have currently have any a trellising system at all for the raspberries?
No, they're only maybe about 2 feet tall, so okay. I should trellis those.
So a lot of times raspberries, true raspberries, do better with a trellis system of some sort. So that can be something as simple as a few lines of a thicker, like, metal cable, or you can also use, sometimes people use, like, chicken wire or a type of that kind of thinner metal fence. But as far as moving them goes, if they're that small, you definitely should be able to move them with no problem. And again, I would wait until they go dormant. So I would wait until later in the fall, so later October, before the ground freezes. And those you should be able to dig out and move with no problem.
Just make sure I dig, like, all the root out and move it. Any of the hole ready and all of that?
Yeah. You don't have to get each... You don't have to get every single bit of root, but what's important is to make sure that you get as much of what's called the root ball as possible. And the root ball is really, at least on most shrubs, is going to be about 1 to 2 feet from the base of the plant. So where the shrub comes out of the ground. And so getting as much of that root ball as possible is really what's going to help with its long-term establishment. But you don't have to get all of the roots that are farther away from that root ball.
Okay. And how tall should the trellis be? I've never grown raspberries before, so.
Yeah, that's kind of up to you. If you can give it about 3 or 4 feet, then that's going to be... best.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
For the plant. But with that said, raspberries you can prune. I mean, you do a lot of times you'll prune them to encourage more fruit production. And so they can be kept smaller. So if you put on a smaller trellis, then that should be fine, but you will have to prune it more often. And whenever I talk about a trellis for a raspberry, I think in terms of like what a grapevine trellis would look like and how it's a longer trellis and not a taller trellis, if that makes sense. So instead of a rose trellis that goes up, you want something that goes out.
Okay. And when do you prune raspberries?
Again, usually those are going to be during the dormant months. That's something that honestly I don't know enough about to give you a like an expert answer on, but I will say that there's lots of information out there about raspberries and blackberries, and we have a wonderful extension office. So the University of Missouri Extension Office has a lot of information available through them. Or you can also look at some of the organizations that work with community gardens like Seed St. Louis or Urban Harvest. They may have some resources on their websites that are available to the general public.
And I call the botanical hotline, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And shame on me for not bringing them up. I mean,
I'm a member of a garden club, and we're actually coming out to Shaw Nature Reserve on the 29th of August and then going to lunch out there. Forget the name of the restaurant out there, but further, you know, not at the Shaw Nature Reserve, but we've been there a couple of times. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, wonderful. Well, if you're out there and you want to check in at the visitor center, you're welcome to ask for Aaron, and I'll come out and say hi if I can.
Oh, all sure. Right. That'd be great. All right, thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Linda. Let's go next to Michelle. Thanks for calling in. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Thanks, Aaron. My question is about my hydrangea plants. I have two very large bushes on the east side of my home. I get a lot of shade and sun, so it gets both. And the backyard and the side yard of my home were professionally landscaped prior to me moving in. And in the 8 years I've lived here, I have never gotten blooms on these. And they're beautiful, big, green, lush, and I cannot coax a bloom out of them. I have used fertilizer, and I'm just trying to figure out if there's any way I can get these suckers to bloom. Mm. But I also want to know, I know that I've heard that you should leave them alone, never prune them. So I've gone periods of time where I've never removed the old sticks because the growth seems to be new growth, not on the existing vines. And then I've also heard people say, no, you actually should take the dead sticks out. So I'm hoping you might be able to give me some helpful tips on how I can coax some blooms out of these guys.
Yeah, hydrangeas. So if I can ask a question, the hydrangeas that you have, do you know, are they panicle hydrangeas or are they the big leaf hydrangeas? Are they the hydrangeas that turn colors?
They do turn colors. They are the smaller. They're not the huge leaf type. Now, I have a couple against the side of my home, and one of them every year gives me maybe two blooms. The other one gives me nothing, and they are pink, but they're not okay. The huge leaf ones. They're the smaller leaf, or the smaller petal, I should say. Sorry.
Okay. So it sounds like you have the hydrangea macrophylla, which is the big leaf, more shade type. Those can be tricky here in St. Louis. A lot of times people are dealing with more of the soil pH. You know, they want the pink or they want the blue and not the purple. But it sounds like I'm wondering if, do you have irrigation? Are you irrigating?
I do, yeah. It was perfect. It was professionally landscaped okay. Prior to us moving in, and there's irrigation. They're kind of on a sloped hill that goes down into the rest of the yard. I have to think, since the previous owners had it beautifully and professionally landscaped, that whoever did it knew what they were doing. I just, in the 8 years, have never seen a bloom on them. And I've tried using, correct pH balance fertilizer to try to help, you know, for the acid, but I just can't get a bloom on them.
Yeah. So what I would try this year is early in the season, so maybe late March, early April, I'll go in and thin out the dead stalks. So you'll know that they're dead because there's no so by that
growth
time
on.
Right, there should be a little, your buds should be kind of thick and they should be starting to pop out a little bit. And so go in and take out all of the stems that are, or the branches that are completely dead. And then make sure to take out all of the leaf material that's at the base of the plant, and just leave the stems that are living. And then a little bit later on, as it starts to leaf out, go ahead and prune back about no more than a third of the plant. But I would try pruning it and see if that encourages some growth of the flowering parts.
Okay.
Because if
and
you
should I use some of that fertilizer as well, the Miracle-Gro acid pH product?
You can try that, but really just you don't, unless you are really wanting that color change, you know, you're really wanting a blue or a pink.
Okay.
You don't have to necessarily use a soil conditioner or a fertilizer like that. But I would make sure that that area is also mulched, because those hydrangeas typically need a moister soil or a consistently moist soil. And then they do appreciate that extra moisture. So holding the moisture in using mulch is going to help.
Okay.
But try thinning it and try pruning it a little bit and just see what happens.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Michelle. This is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Erin Goss is taking your calls. She's the coordinator for the Native Plant Initiative at Shaw Nature Reserve. And we are going to continue in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back on the Garden Hotline. Erin Goss is with us. She is the coordinator for the Native Plant Initiative at Shaw Nature Reserve, taking your phone calls. Let us see who is up next. I believe it's Bill. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes. I have a walnut tree, a buckeye tree, that has mostly, it's kind of under the shade or shaded probably too much, but it has had little leaves on it, and now it's got buds on it. It's still viable and still alive. Should I replant it where it's more sunny, or should I get fertilizer? Or I've been fertilizing it. I don't know. It just seemed to be staying where the same size that it is, about 12 inches tall.
All right. So the buckeye, how long has it been in the ground?
This is its first year out of the pot.
Okay. So a lot of times what happens with trees is that once they go into the ground, they have a period of time when they're putting on root growth, but they're not really putting on growth anywhere else. So it's possible that the tree is, it's doing its thing, it's putting on root growth, but you're just not seeing much going on the top. My other question would be, do you know what color of bloom the buckeye is supposed to have? Is it a yellow or red?
It's kind of, it's a mostly red.
Red, okay. So you probably then have a red buckeye, and red buckeyes really, really, really appreciate afternoon shade. So if you have it in a...
Well, they're getting afternoon shade.
Okay.
Trouble is maybe not enough in the morning. I don't know.
Well, they do like a little bit of sun. So if it's sitting in morning sun, it's probably going to be happy. The other thing that sometimes buckeyes do is in the summer months, especially red buckeyes, if they're water stressed or if they are if they're stressed at all, their almost immediate response is to drop their leaves. And so sometimes you'll see buckeye trees way before any other tree drops their leaves, they drop their leaves. And that's fairly normal, but that's also a sign of stress. So with your tree in particular, since it's only been in the ground for about a year, I'd let it be. Let it be and see what happens next year if you get a flush of new leaves next year. And then just give it a little bit of time. Because again, a lot of times trees need a little bit more time to establish their roots and then start putting on new growth.
Well, I've read where they're kind of slow growing, but this one's about the same size as I got. Well, I kept it about a year in a pot because it was recommended by somebody. And then this is my first year out, so Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, if you can just give it a little bit more time in the ground and see how it does next year, that would be my recommendation. Because again, a lot of times trees they put on that new root growth the first year, and then they start putting on more growth.
So buds is a good sign anyway.
That's buds is a great sign. Yes,
buds are good.
Buds are good.
All right, thanks for calling in, Bill. Mary on line 5, you're up next.
Hi there. Good morning. Thanks for your service and being there, Aaron. When you were talking to the lady or gentleman about brown patches, mm-hmm. and we have a combination zoysia and fescue lawn. At one time it was all zoysia, but fescues entered into the picture. And I noticed last fall, a pretty big section of it was brown. And I thought, well, it was a hot mm-hmm. summer, and we don't have an irrigation system, and maybe I didn't water enough, et cetera. Well, that part did not come back in the spring. And the area has grown, and there's definitely huge dead patches. So we've had a couple of turf people come in. They really don't know what caused it other than maybe it's called zoysia decline. Mm. Someone did suggest maybe it's a fungus. I don't walk on it and have anything on my shoe like the gentleman was talking about before. We're going to have it aerated, which hasn't been done for a while, and we're going to have it reseeded. I'm concerned about if it is a fungus, should we do something first for that?
So honestly, I would trust the turf company. If they're saying that they don't think that it's an issue to overseed, I'd go ahead and go with that. Honestly, a lot of funguses in turf are driven by high humidity and irrigating at the wrong time of the day. So mm-hmm. if you do move forward with overseeding and aeration,
yes.
then
mm-hmm.
after that, I would make sure to irrigate early in the morning, so as early as possible. And I mean even 6 a.m. if possible. Because if you irrigate late in the afternoon, which is what some people do, that the water sits on the water droplet sits on the leaf blades of the turf, and then that is what helps to spread and exacerbate a fungal infection. So if you can, again, if you go ahead and do the overseeding and the aeration, just make sure you irrigate early in the morning. And if you can stop with the irrigating prior to 10 a.m., then your chances of having a fungal infection is going to decline.
Okay. Thank you for that information.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in, Mary. Up next, we have another Mary. Mary, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Erin. I have two questions, please. First one is, I have tried planting chrysanthemums every fall. I only buy the perennials, but I cannot get them to come back up the next year. I only buy the hardy ones, and for some reason they don't seem to want to come back up. I've had one that came back up this past year, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful. But for the most part, I mean, like I planted 7 of them last year and only one of them came back up. And I was wondering if there's something that I'm doing, if it's the plant, or, I mean, my mother used to plant them and they would just come up all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now I can't seem to get them. I've tried it year after year after year, and I can't seem to get them to come back up.
Yeah, those hardy chrysanthemums are tricky. Most of the people that I know that plant them, they do not last. And so your mother must have had some trick up her sleeve, because a lot of times they don't. They're considered hardy, but they don't always make it through the winter. So what you can do is you can try to protect them. If you haven't tried that already, is just protect them with some leaves. So even if you mm-hmm. just take all of your leaves and instead of blowing the leaves off site or taking them away, blow the leaves so that they're around the chrysanthemums. That might help.
I do that.
You do that?
I do that, yes.
You do that? Okay. That's really outside of putting something like a frost cloth on them. That's really all that I know what to do. Another alternative is that you could plant some of our native asters or even some of the non-native asters. They're chrysanthemum. They're relations to a chrysanthemum. They look very similar. They have a little different leaf, but you can mm-hmm. find some that are smaller that aren't like New England asters are really tall, but we have mm-hmm. an aromatic aster that's much shorter and it's a mounder.
Right.
So it has a uh-huh. feeling of a chrysanthemum. So you could also try mixing in or substituting some of the hardier asters. I know it's not the same color, bloom color, and it's not quite the same, but that would guarantee that they would last.
Okay. My other question is, I've tried planting or tried growing wildflowers,
mm-hmm.
Tried planting wildflowers, and it seems I always get mainly chicory. And is it just the seeds that are bad or what? I mean, I thought I would get them from like reputable companies,
mm-hmm.
but I always seem to get I don't seem to get the wildflowers that I expect to get.
Yeah, sure. So it could be a combination of things. So a lot of the wildflower mixes that are commercially available, say like at Home Depot or some of the bigger box stores, those wildflower mixes are coming in from all over the country. And so they mm-hmm. also, I don't want to speak bad of the companies at all, but there sometimes are weed seeds mixed in. So it's possible mm-hmm. that the wildflower mixes that you are getting are seeds that are coming from plants that are growing from other places around the country that aren't acclimated to our climate. So if you go to, say, a place like Missouri Wildflowers Nursery, they are located outside of Jefferson City. They sell wildflower mixes. All of those seeds are going to come from local sources. And so they're going to be adapted. So that's one thing. The other thing could be the ground preparation. You got to make sure that your soil is completely clear of all vegetation before you start seeding.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Mary. We appreciate it this morning on the Garden Hotline. Aaron Goss is taking your questions, and we have a few more minutes to go, so stay tuned. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Aaron Goss taking your questions. She's with the Native Plant Initiative at Shaw Nature Reserve. Bernice, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Aaron. I have a question about a creeping phlox. It is overtaking my sidewalk, and I need to move it. I know I pick it up and there's no roots under it, but I'm hoping there's a way of moving it to another location and when.
Yes, you definitely can move the creeping phlox. So creeping phlox is going to have, if you pull it up, like the leaves up off of the sidewalk, trace that back, you should find a point where the phlox is growing out of the ground. You can cut that phlox back to where it's closer to its growth point, and then go ahead and dig it out and transplant it. I would transplant it in the fall, so late September, early October is when you're going to want to transplant it.
Okay, so I should try to have a bit of the root to go with it.
Definitely. You're going to want some root in order for it to transplant well.
Okay. And should I give it any food when I replant it or anything?
No, I wouldn't. If you want to give it a little bit of extra mulch around the base, that would help. But I would wait. If you're going to fertilize, I would wait until the spring to fertilize it.
All right. Continuing with your phone calls for Aaron, Leanne, you're up next.
Hi, good morning. This is so funny. So my question is also about creeping phlox. but of a different nature. So my husband and I bought this house less than a year ago, and we were delighted in the spring by these two beautiful colors of creeping phlox. It's in these concrete, partially enclosed boxes in the front yard. Where it's not enclosed is towards the lawn, and my problem is that the grass is coming in. Mm. There is a metal edge, but, you know, I've heard that phlox is supposed to keep out weeds, but which I think it is, but the grass is getting in, and it's mm-hmm. on a couple of the boxes, it's even all the way across the 3-foot box that I can see. But in the spring, it was like a beautiful uniform carpet. So I don't know what the previous owner did to manage the grass, but it seems odd to me that grass has gotten across that 3 feet just since the spring.
So I would say it's a combination between our weather and then whatever type of grass you have. So we had a really wet spring, and we've had a decently consistent moisture, and that's usually makes turf fairly happy. And so if you've got a running or a creeping turf, so something like Bermuda grass or even Zoysia, that's going to that'll jump over a lot of barriers, even if you have an edging there. So you'll need to go in and remove that turf. And then if you can, sometimes you can put in, if you've got metal edging already, if you can create a little bit of a barrier between the metal edge and the turf itself, so like dig down about a 45-degree angle, create what's called a natural edge, that should help the turf from growing up and over the metal edging.
And that would be a 45-degree going down from the grass to the edging.
Correct.
Okay. All right. We will try that. Thank you so much.
Great. You're welcome.
Thank you, Leanne, for calling in. Luella, you're up next with Aaron.
Hello. Thank you for calling. I have two tree stumps that have been ground down. The locust tree, I can't get anything to grow on it. I put in wildflower mix and lots of grass seed, but it doesn't seem to grow anything. The second one was a maple tree that we got too old, and we cut it down. And that seems to be growing a little bit of grass, but not much. What should I do? I'd like to have a little lily garden in the maple area.
So you said that the stumps were ground down, and were the remaining chips left where they fell?
Most of them were, yes.
Okay, so honestly, that might be part of the problem. So if you don't have soil directly underneath that the chips, then you're basically planting straight into tree chips, which is not the ideal condition for seeds or plants. So what I would suggest is, going to a place like St. Louis Compost and purchasing some soil, and then go ahead and mix in some of that soil. Or remove some of the chips and replace it with some soil, and then you can put the chips back on top. But you need soil in order to have any kind of growth from your plant growth. So make sure there's soil and you have soil contact. Make sure you have some soil underneath the ground out stumps.
All right, Luella, thanks for calling in to the Garden Hotline on this wonderful Saturday morning. Aaron Goss, coordinator for the Native Plant Initiative at Shaw Nature Reserve. Thanks so much. You were great.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
It looked like you were having fun.
Yeah.
And you're welcome back anytime. So we appreciate it, you coming in and taking the time to answer people's questions. That's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.